Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, Beaver Nation, and welcome to Beaver Banter, an Oregonian sports podcast. I'm Joe Freeman, senior writer at The Oregonian, and he's Nick Daschle, Beaver's beat writer at The Oregonian, and we're here to talk all things Oregon State. Daschle, what's up, man? How you doing today?
Just gearing up for a real busy week between spring football starting and Pac-12 women's basketball tournament and whatever else hits me, you in baseball, and busy week.
Throwing spring football into the mix of everything really adds a lot to the plate there. But a lot of interest at this stage of things for the football team, for sure. It's with so much transition, as has been well documented. It's usually I don't really give two-know-whats about spring football. It's usually relatively, if not meaningless, it's kind of going through the motions, but
I think it's something that some fans tend to care about a lot, that most fans care a little bit about it, and so we're there. But I mean, half of it really is, as former football coaches have said, it's PE, because they're wearing shorts and helmets, and it's really not, it's more about teaching in the spring. And I mean, we'll see a little bit of a finished product at the end, but it really doesn't hit it hard until we get to August. That's when things really, you know, start picking up. But the spring gives us a little bit of a taste as to what is there. I get asked a lot from fans, and I was on a Beaver podcast not long ago, and they asked me, what's your prediction for this season? And I'm just going, I have no idea. I mean, I really have no idea if this team's going to be good, below average, great. It's just, there's so many, too many unknowns to even, I know people want to know, oh, they're going to be 11-1, right? I don't know. I mean, Trent Bray could be great, but he might not be. I don't know. He's never been a head coach. You know, they got three returning starters or something like that. Got a lot of transfers. I mean, we got to find out how these guys mix in and what a new offense looks like, and, you know, how Kyle Devan is as an offensive line coach, and what the defense is under Keith Hayward. And I don't, it's just, I mean, just, you know, what happens if the team stumbles once or twice early in the season? Do they lose, you know, how is Trent going to pick them up and get them going? And that's just, a lot of this stuff is just so unknowable that I wouldn't even begin to make a prediction until probably August 20th or so.
Yeah, one thing I will say, and we'll get into a lot more of that here shortly, but at the very least, with all the coaching changes you just highlighted, the dramatic roster overhaul you just brought up, and just the sort of uncharted waters these Beavers are navigating, you know, in the middle of conference realignment, there's general intrigue surrounding the team this spring, and some of it's unknown, and some of it's sort of the idea of what's next and the kind of tantalizing potential of the combination of that unknown and what's next. So I do sort of, more than most normal years, I think there is more interest, and I can relate to fans who are, you know, more intrigued than normal. And, you know, we'll certainly get into basketball and baseball before we sign off of this podcast. But spring football does open tomorrow. We're recording Monday, March 4th. So spring opens tomorrow, when we'll kind of get our first look at new coach Trent Bray and the drastically overhauled roster. Just so you know the details, the Beavers are holding 6 practices this month, 3 this week, 3 next week, before taking a couple weeks off for finals and spring break. And then they'll pick back up in April with the spring game scheduled for April 20. So, you know, I've covered a handful of games, a handful of practices last year. I've covered, you know, a week of spring filling in for you a couple times over the last 3-ish years. But so I don't have the background and context that you do. I guess just as we go into kind of the great unknown of the spring, what will you kind of be keeping your eyes on? What's the first thing that's going to draw your attention tomorrow in the frigid morning hours in Corvallis?
Well, I think the first week, you kind of wanted to see how things are organized. I mean, you're used to seeing, you know, 6 years of Jonathan Smith's teams where they go in and they get a little, they get warmed up a little bit, then they do some stretching and just some, you know, basic warm up exercises, and then they go in individual drills for quite a while, mix in some scrimmaging, some special teams, and go back to, you know, teaching, and then maybe finish it up with some scrimmages and, you know, a couple of, you know, situational stuff. How does Trent run his practice? I gotta believe he's gonna be, I can't believe he's gonna just reinvent the wheel. He's coached under Riley and Smith, and they tend to do things, you know, kind of, they're not going to go crazy. He's not going to go crazy the other way. I think he might pick up the tempo. Maybe he'll pick up the tempo a little bit. I know he said he wants to do more situational stuff, so we may see more of that. But I got to believe the first week is going to be a lot of teaching, because there's so many new guys on this roster that – and they want to do things different on offense and defense. You know, it could be a little bit of a, it could be somewhat the same, but I'm sure Keith Hayward is going to want to throw his, you know, put his stamp on the defense too. So there'll be some things different there. So mostly the first week, just want to look and see how it's organized. Want to see how Trent Bray is, how he does his thing out there. I mean, we're used to seeing him at practice. Just, I mean, he runs around more than the players do. Mm-hmm. When he was the coordinator and the position coach. Well, how is he going to be now? Is he going to stand back and observe? Is he going to jump into drills? Is he going to, you know, do a lot of teaching himself? I don't know how he's going to, I mean, he's talked about being a CEO, but I mean, when you've been coaching like he has for so many years, I don't know, you know, I don't know if you can just totally turn that off and be the, you know, the figurehead. And
I think from the CEO standpoint, like, my read on him being the CEO is more of like a game day CEO and a big picture CEO. But like, I feel like behind the scenes at practices, and especially, you know, early on here was his first moment to kind of put his imprint on how things will be moving forward. I feel like he's going to be kind of in the trenches, bouncing around. And I mean, it's naturally his personality, obviously, but
yeah,
I think he's, well, he's just, deep just, in the nitty-gritty, yeah, during practice.
Well, I mean, my only observation of, you know, in this role sort of was at the Sun Bowl at, you know, in El Paso, where he really wasn't even the head coach then. I mean, he was definitely hands off. I mean, before practice, he'd spend his time walking around the track of the practice field with his AirPods in. I don't know what he was listening to, and then he'd just kind of go to the field and just sort of watch. He didn't really do much of anything, but I think he was, you know, letting Fence, you know, fill his role as the interim head coach for that one. And I think he's going to be a little more engaged than Jonathan was, but that's just a guess, just because of his personality.
Is there any, I mean, I'll be keeping, as with every spring, you know, you kind of look at quarterback. And it seems like, you know, with all the changes swirling around the program, one thing remains the same, and that's there's going to be a quarterback competition. It seems like every year for the last few years, we've had one of those. And you know, I kind of talking about spring and whether or not how much of an impact it can have. I go back to last spring and, you know, DJ was pretty up and down slash rusty early in spring. And he was not the better of the trio, you know, early on. I think he eventually found his footing, obviously, and was the clear winner in that battle. But, you know, it'll be interesting now with a guy like Gulbranson who, you know, I guess you say he has a leg up on the other guys just because of his familiarity with the program. But then on the other side, it's a new system with a new, you know, staff, a new OC. And so at that, I guess at some level, they're all kind of even footed going into the thing. But yeah, I don't know. Beyond the quarterback, which we can get into, you know, in a minute here, are there any battles or any positions that you're especially intrigued by? I mean, there's so much turnover. It's almost like the whole dang roster, you know?
Well, I want to see if Damian Martinez can hang on to his starting job as running back.
Yeah. So, yeah. That's a big question mark for sure.
That's really about the only position that you can go, man, you know, that one's pretty much set.
Josh Gray.
It's Damian. And then it's a couple of back guys that are going to get some reps, but everything else is, no, it's everything. I mean, it really is everything. Because they have so many new faces on this roster. Mm-hmm. That's where, I mean, I want to see up front on the defensive line, Thomas Collins and Kelsey Howard. They were big names coming in last year as freshmen. Thomas Collins played a little bit. Kelsey didn't play at all. I want to see, I think that's how you say his first name, Kelsey. Yeah, you know, I want to see how they've progressed over the course of a year. Are they going to be the impact players? Maybe not this year, but are they making moves toward being that impact player on the defensive line? You know, those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know what's going to happen with quarterback. I mean, you know, Ben Gulbranson he's got the experience, obviously, being in this at Oregon State, but not in the system. And I mean, I get the impression from Gundy, he likes to have a multiple, you know, a dual threat type, and that's just not Ben Gulbranson. He can move a little bit, but not like, you know, that's not his deal. And, you know, so can he adapt to this system? I don't know. And my sense is he wants to see how he fits in this spring. He's never said this. I'm speculating. I'm just make this clear. I'm just speculating here. That he's going to take a look and see what it looks like this spring, and then maybe when the transfer window opens, that's when he'll decide whether or not he wants to stick around or move on to medical school or go to another program. That's just my gut feeling on him is okay, that.
Okay, so 12:18 p.m. March 4th, Daschle is first to predict that Gulbranson will transfer after the spring. Okay, I'm going to write
that. That is not what I said, Joe. It is not what I said. I said he's going to use these 15 practices to see where he fits in.
You know what? I believe that it's, you know, a quote-unquote wide-open battle going into the spring. But I also believe that the coaching staff believes that Javonte McCoy is going to be their guy. That's kind of my read on the situation. You know, it was interesting talking to Trent Bray in January about the quarterback situation. And, you know, I think we've talked about this before, but, you know, they kind of pursued multiple former five-star guys in the portal who had gone to big name schools and for whatever reason, you know, not really developed into the guy there. And so they were moving elsewhere, you know, kind of like a guy like the Texas guy from Malik Murphy, the transfer from Texas. Right. And Bray kept asking Gunderson, and they kept having these conversations, why are we going after these guys? What makes these guys better than McCoy? And the answer was always, well, you know, they were five-star guys in high school. And it was kind of like, well, who gives a whatever? They have film of McCoy excelling, playing well, doing the things that they want a quarterback to do in their system. And they just kept going back to him. Like, why is this kid from Texas better than this kid at Idaho? And show me why. And, you know, I just think they kind of fell in love with McCoy and what he can bring. You know, Bray kind of said he reminds him of Vernon Adams, the guy from Eastern Washington who transferred to Oregon and became their starter a few years ago. And, you know, Trent said, we need a guy that can win now. So I don't see them going young. So, you know, you've got the really talented prospect from Tacoma, I believe he's from, Jabari Johnson, who, you know, I think will be in the mix as well. But I just feel like they're pushing all their chips in on McCoy. They think his, like you said, the dual threat kind of capabilities, you know, he has some of that two-way kind of ability. And, I mean, he passed for over 5,500 yards and 43 TDs at Idaho. And, you know, I think we all roll our eyes and say, yeah, that's Idaho. But, you know, Trent Bray will retort and say, well, he played very well against Cal and against other Power Five programs. He played well against Boise State, and he did it all with FCS, with an FCS roster. So I think they like his accuracy, his athleticism, and just his kind of moxie that he brings there. And I think they think he fits into what they want to do. So if I'm handicapping that race right now, you know, if I'm taking a horse in this race, I'm taking Giovanni McCoy.
I mean, I wouldn't disagree with you on that. But I do think they want to see what they have in Jabari Johnson, because he comes to college football with a higher ceiling than Giovanni McCoy. Now Giovanni's proven some things, obviously, but you know, I think they want to see what they have with Jabari Johnson. Maybe he's not ready yet. Maybe I don't know. And so that's what spring football is all about, is seeing what these guys have.
Yeah. But and to that point, I mean, he playing as a redshirt freshman or a redshirt at Missouri last year. I mean, he had some big game experience just being around the program, even if he didn't play. You know, that was a very good team last year, and so
it wasn't like he transferred from you know, Texas State or something like that. Right. He came from a program that was a top 10 program last year.
Yeah. And that was one of the things that Bray brought up as well, is he really likes how his quarterback room stacks up kind of experience / age wise. You know, he's kind of like, you know, we don't want three juniors in there right now because they're going to leave. Whoever doesn't win the job is out. They're going to bounce. And so
right. He
likes how they're staggered. And, you know, we haven't brought up Kalen Gutrich, the kid from Wilsonville. I think we all agree that he's a surefire redshirt candidate. But, you know, I think generally speaking, they like their room and in both, you know, its potential and what it can do, you know, in the here and now.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't expect them to name a leader. I don't expect them to name, you know, a guy who's won the race after spring. Like you've said, it's spring. This is all going to be decided in August, but it will be, you know, the thing that I will be keeping my eyes on mostly, you know, in the coming weeks. And, you know, it's a first look at these guys.
Well,
literally, we haven't seen them
in the 6 years of Jonathan Smith. They didn't announce a starting quarterback until the third or fourth week of August.
Yeah. Well, you don't want your guy to transfer. Well,
I don't see anything changing this year.
Yeah. You don't want your guy to transfer. If you do make some type of announcement or make a call, the guy's bouncing after spring. I mean, and that's one thing that I don't know. It lessens the spring even more, is if a guy sees the writing on the wall, the roster that we see now might not even be the roster we see in August. So it's kind of hard to.
I think every program better get ready to lose a half a dozen guys at least after the spring to the second portal window.
Yeah.
Because once they get a test drive of the roster, see where they fit, you know, I think I could play here, or it's going to be tough. Maybe I'll try something else.
Yeah, it's, you know, in front of the quarterbacks, it's the offensive line is also such a question mark. I mean, beyond Joshua Gray, it's just entirely new. And there is a lot of experience, and I, you know, Bray has touted some of his transfers, including, you know, the Colorado guys, but it's like that Colorado offensive line was horrible last year. So, you know, how does that work in at Oregon State, and what is the balance there, and are they better with different guys? And I don't know. I'm curious to see what has been the overwhelming strength of the roster, you know, for so long. How does that work under a new coach and a new you know, scheme?
The thing with the Colorado transfers is Kyle coached these guys 2 years ago when he was at Colorado. So I don't think he would have brought them in just based on last year. He kind of knows what they're like. So that makes me feel like, yeah, that was a one-off at Colorado last year. He knows what they got with these guys. So, but they had some guys in the pipeline too from the Jim Mahalchik era. So, I think they're in pretty good shape on the offensive line. It'll take a while to get it together, but I'm not too concerned about the offensive line.
All right. Anything else before we move along? You want to delve into any more spring topics there?
No, I think, well, we got more podcasts coming. So once we see some stuff, there'll be plenty of things to talk about. But I mean, there's just, like I said, there's probably 40 or 50 names that I could put on my notebook and go, this is a guy I want to see do this, or how is he fitting in? Or when it might be 15 names going into spring. This year it's, you know, 40 to 50 names, half the roster probably.
Okay, well, let's switch gears here. We'll move along to some basketball, and specifically the women's basketball team. The Beavers dropped to number 13 in this week's AP poll. They split a weekend series against the Bay Area schools last week, but they did clinch a first-round bye in the Pac-12 tournament and the number 4 seed there. So, you know, that was huge, and most importantly, obviously, they welcomed the return of star Reagan Beers. You know, after missing 4 games with a broken nose, she kind of came back for the regular season finale there, helping the Beavers beat Cal and clinch that 4th seed on Saturday. She, you know, a decent game, 14 points and 6 rebounds, kind of wearing a protective mask. But just her return, you know, the timing of that couldn't be better, as the Beavers' next game will, of course, come in the Pac-12 tournament in Vegas on Thursday. And then they'll face they because of that first round bye, give her a little more time to kind of, I don't know, heal up or whatever you want to say, give them a couple days extra rest. And then they'll face the winner between the 5 seed and 12 seed, which is Colorado and Oregon. So I guess, you know, might as well look at Reagan Beers first. How would you evaluate, and, you know, how did she look, and how did things go with the mask? That was kind of a big curiosity heading into that weekend.
Well, Joe, you know what life is like without beers.
I do not know what life is like without beers. Well, actually, no, I do dryuary. So, yes, I do know. I do know.
Okay, well, that's kind of what Oregon State was going through. No beers, and that was bad. It wasn't bad, but it was just like that was a missing component. And I mean, you could just see the difference between when they have Reagan Beers on the floor and when they don't. When she's on the floor, it's not necessarily that she scored 14 points. It's she opens up the offense. Team suddenly got a double team her in the post, or at least pay a lot of attention to her, and it opens up everything. The passing is better. And the way Saturday's game worked was exactly what I thought would happen. It took a half to get back to, you know, figuring out how things work. And the second half, it looked like they looked as good as they've looked all season. They scored, you know, more points than they had in any conference game this season and a half. They hit, I think it was like 60-some% from the floor. I mean, they just buried Cal once they got it figured out. And I don't know. I just they didn't lose to Stanford by much. They didn't lose to USC by much without beer with beers out. I mean, she makes that much of a difference. They could be going if she had not got hurt. I think they could be going into the conference tournament with 11-12 game winning streak. They weren't that far away from winning those games, and she's in there. She makes a big difference. Now, can they win the Pac-12 tournament? I mean, who knows? There's been years Oregon State has won the conference tournament or won the conference outright, and then went down to Pac-12 and you know laid an egg, lost their first game. And there's been years when they haven't been very good. They've gone down and maybe they've got to the championship game. Mm-hmm. So it's, you just never know. But I think there's a lot on the line for Oregon State here. If they can get to the championship game, which means they have to beat Stanford.
Face Stanford in the semis the way it stacks up.
Yeah, they would have to beat
Stanford. Beers back for that Stanford game. Maybe she just wasn't ready, or maybe they didn't want to, you know, throw a wrench into things.
I think she needed to get some practices in where she was feeling comfortable, you know, walking, you know, running up and down the floor without feeling the effects. And I think that happened on Friday after the Stanford game. But if they can get to the championship game, I think they could get as high as the 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. And at that point, maybe they stay in Portland for the regional. The problem is right now, I think they're going to play in Albany. That's where the NCAA is going to have them slotted if they can't move their way up, because the Pac-12 is so difficult this year. They have Stanford and UCLA and USC all seeded ahead of Oregon State in the NCAA bracket. And so the top two teams get preference. And so for regional placement, and Stanford and UCLA would be staying, you know, closer to home, and they'd move USC and Oregon State out to Albany. So that would be kind of that. Those are really the stakes. You want to win a game to assure you're a top 4 seed for the NCAA tournament, so you can play at home. And next is you want to try to get to the championship game and maybe convince the NCAA you're one of the top 2 teams in the conference and get one of those and land in Portland. That would be huge for Oregon State if given their postseason aspirations.
Okay, so in light of that handicap next week for me, I mean, Beers is back. We know her importance. You know, I don't think that we would say she's the one that's going to separate whether or not they win. She's back. So who's the X factor? What's going to determine, you know, I guess, who's the separator here in this next week of whether they can get into the championship game?
Dashiell. I mean, they're going to end up playing either probably they'll play Colorado or Oregon. So let's just say they're going to play Colorado since Oregon hasn't won in, I don't know, 8-9 weeks. It would be just like Oregon to win that game, though. But they're probably going to play Colorado. That's going to be a tough game, but Oregon State has had Colorado's number all year, and Colorado's not playing great. I think they get past that game. Now they get to Stanford. That's where a player like a Talia Von Olhoffen will have to have one of her better games of the year. She's proven to be a real star at the defensive end, and she can produce at the offensive end too. In big games, she scored 27 against Stanford last week, and she obviously hit those big shots against UCLA. She's going to have a big game. I kind of think Donovan Hunter. What, either Donovan Hunter or who was the other one that had the breakup? AJ Murat. One of those two had kind of broke out against Cal. I think one of those two. If one of those two can have a big performance down in the tournament, that would bode well, because they're not players that we've seen score a lot on offense, but they're capable, and they need somebody to pick up a little bit of the slack at that end. The other thing is the tournament sets up kind of well because they don't play 3 straight days. Mm-hmm. They play Thursday, they play Friday, then they take Saturday off, then they play Sunday if you get that far. So I don't feel like teams are going to wear – you get worn out playing if you have a first-round bye, because you only have to play the 2 games before you get a day off and then the championship game. It's still tough, obviously, but it's not like the men's tournament – the men's tournament, you got to play every day, and it could be 4 straight days to if you want to get to the championship game. So they get a little bit of a break in that regard. I'm not predicting they're going to win the tournament, but they certainly have a chance. They certainly have a chance with Reagan Beers in there.
Okay, so I'm in Vegas next week, and I don't know. I walk into New York, New York. What table am I seeing Nick Dashiell at?
not seeing me in any of them. I'm really not going to be.
Are you at the blackjack table? Are you playing craps? Are you at the roulette wheel? What's going on there with you?
You know, the last several times I've gone to anything. I like sitting down in the sports book and watching games, but I don't necessarily bet on them. I just sit and watch some, and I just kind of like watching people more than anything else. Like I'll stand and watch those dueling piano bars out at the Paris Hotel. What's that one? I can't remember. Anyway. Yeah, whatever it is. Yeah, I've stand and watched that. That's kind of fun. I mean, there's so many people down there. It's just, I kind of like to see, I need to see the Sphere. I've been down there since it's been built, but I haven't actually seen it. Mm. So I kind of want to see that. But,
well, Oregon State fans, do not seek out Nick Daschle in Vegas because he is going to be a gigantic buzzkill. So you go to your games, you go watch your Beavs, and then you go do your thing. And if you see Daschle coming at you down the hotel or casino floor, walk the other way.
I mean, part of it is, God, you go to Vegas and you get toward the weekend, the craps tables have like $15 or $20 minimums on it.
Yeah, no.
I mean, I like playing craps like the next guy, but geez, those, you know, if you've got any money out there at all, I don't have Joe Freeman money.
Well, there it is. We just got it. It's craps. Craps is the game. It has been unearthed. You just admitted it's crap.
No, I like craps. It's just in Vegas, it's just too darn, I mean, it can get so expensive down there then.
Yeah, man. Vegas used to be really cheap, you know, airfare, and once you get there, a place to stay and all that. You know, it is not anymore.
Food used to be cheap down there. Yeah. I mean, even Starbucks is expensive in Vegas. It's insane how they've, but people go. I mean, there's no shortage of people down there. Yeah, so
there's something going on every week.
And they keep building buildings and keep, you know, there's a reason they're building buildings, because there's people are spending money down there. So,
all right. Do you want to switch gears to baseball, or do you want me to put a timer on to give you 90 seconds to talk about the men's basketball while I take a short nap? Which would you rather do next?
God, you know, I should make you cover one of these men's basketball
90
games.
Seconds. Here you go. Okay, ready?
No, I don't really have anything to say about men's basketball. They'd be, you know, they got to try to win at least one of these two this weekend to get some momentum, go to the Pac-12 tournament, and maybe finish with 14 or 15 wins and keep this thing going into next year. I've got a story. I talked to Wayne Tinkle on Thursday.
Okay.
I haven't written it yet, but just on his thoughts on how he feels like things are going, and his thoughts on, you know, whether he should return, and which, you know, I'm not going to break any news here. Of course, he thinks he should return.
No.
So,
no.
But, you know, where he thinks the program is headed and things like that. And I'll be writing that. And I'll probably write in the next day or so. But I don't know. I mean, they're better. I don't know if they're good enough to make fans think they're better, but they're better. I don't really. It's hard to get too fired up about a 12-win team. But I don't know.
Well, that's why I gave you 90 seconds. That was perfect.
I'm just kind of waiting for. I mean, I'm kind of waiting to see what happens in the off season and see who's left and. If they can keep, like I've been saying, if they keep this roster mostly together, I think they'll be pretty competitive in the WCC next year. But
okay,
a lot of ifs there.
All right. Well, we'll have plenty of time to talk or not talk about that in the weeks and months ahead.
You talk about men's basketball.
Now we'll shift gears to certainly a more alluring program, and that's the baseball team. The Beavers had another solid week. They did not play a good team. North Dakota State is by no means would it be confused as a world beater. I was surprised. They did sweep a four-game series, though. I was surprised to learn over the weekend, you know, while doing my research for that tournament, the Bison do not play a home game until April 5th. Because of obviously the horrible weather in Fargo. But could you imagine the first month and a half is spent on the road? That's insane, especially for college kids. I just can't imagine. I guess Minnesota does a similar kind of a thing. But But I was blown away by that.
Yeah, I'm sure when they woke up Friday morning and saw snow on the field, they went over and said, "Here, hold my beer."
You know, man, it's like, yeah, I was surprised on Friday morning opening up my curtains from my hotel room that morning, just be like, "What?" And it was, and then by like I don't know, by 10, it was a pretty thick snowfall. And then it just kind of cleared up and everything was fine later in the day. But just a brutal weekend of weather for baseball. Every game dipped down to the 30s by the final pitch. There was rain and sideways wind. And just I didn't feel bad because they're kids playing the game they love and they're good at it. So I didn't feel bad for them. But I felt bad for myself, Dashiell, having to go down there and spend minutes in the elements talking to people after the game. I mean, I'm too old and weak for that kind of stuff, man. We don't have time for that kind of stuff. But anyway.
Well, I got a solution for you. There are two basketball games at Gill Coliseum. They'll be nice and toasty in there. So go ahead. Go inside there this
Maybe
week.
I shouldn't complain, I guess.
Yes, yeah, shut up. But the one thing I was going to say about baseball is, you really can't make any sweeping conclusions out of this series. I mean, based on the opponent and the weather. Yeah. I mean, you get the four wins, you move on. I know there was the one close game. In fact, I was looking at online. I was sitting there at home and I saw it was 5-1 in the bottom of the seventh, and it just started. I go, somehow I know Oregon State's going to find a way to win this game, and sure enough, I mean, it was like one inning, boom, they got back into it.
Yeah, that was you bring up that, and that does raise an interesting point. They did trail 5-0 in both of the first two games, and so I was surprised by that. Ian Lawson had a horrible start on Thursday, and then the offense just could not get anything going until late in that game on Friday in game two. So, you know, I thought that was interesting to see them kind of rally, sort of, I wouldn't say for the first time, but from that large of a deficit to see them rally no matter the opponent, I thought was kind of an encouraging sign. And I agree. I mean, I would say no series will you take any huge, you know, takeaways from, because, you know, any team can get hot over a 3-day stretch. But I will say this, they played without their Friday starter, Aiden May, who tweaked his kind of something in his forearm area in Arkansas, which we talked about, and they kind of held him back as a precaution. And they also played half of the series without both of their, or two of their starting outfielders. Brady Casper hasn't played in 6 games, and Micah McDowell hasn't played in 2. They kind of have minor leg injuries. I think the cold weather and it being early in the season and the quality of opponent contributed to them not playing there. But, you know, coming right in behind them, Dallas Macias comes in and, you know, he hits his first career home run, has two or three really nice games. Easton Tault gets a start on Sunday, has a nice game. Cannon Reeder came in and had a, you know, I think he scored the game tying run and that comeback win. So, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is even against a crappy opponent, they have shown some depth. And so that is encouraging because last year, especially in pitching, they didn't have that depth. And so to see that kind of, I guess, surface even at the early stage of the year, I think would be an encouraging deal. And I also have been pleasantly surprised with the pitching through 3 weeks and especially, you know, with Jacob Kamats, who has really had kind of a, you know, a nice bounce back early season. He didn't pitch great most of last year, even before he kind of, you know, suffered his arm injury. And so to see him, you know, in the last 2 weeks, he struck out 18 batters. He's pitched, you know, 11 innings and just allowed, I don't know, I think 4 hits and 1 earned run. And, you know, one of those games was against Michigan and one was against North Dakota State. But take what you want from it. But I just think that's encouraging to see a veteran guy who's thrown he's played in 40-some games or however many games he's pitched in his career. He's got a 0.64 ERA. To see him rebound from his injury and kind of show, you know, some promise and some encouraging, I take a little bit away from that. And then the freshman, Eric Segura, has been pretty impressive through his first three college starts. He's got two wins, and you know, he's a fighter on there on the mound, and I like what I've kind of seen out of him. So I'm not taking any big takeaways from that, but those are a couple things that kind of come to mind when evaluating the weekend and where Oregon State's at.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I was just getting at that, you know, they're not going to see weather like this probably the rest of the season. And it might see some wet weather, but the cold and that wasn't there like even a power outage at one point or something like that.
The weekend was ridiculous. Game two featured two delays, a 17-minute delay because the lights went out, and then a 23-minute delay because the home plate umpire, the pitcher skipped a pitch, you know, short hopped a pitch, it ricocheted, got through the catcher, smacked the umpire in the right hand. And he decided he couldn't finish the game. And so he leaves and they have to switch and the third pace umpire comes in and gets on his gear. And anyway, so 40 minutes of delays there. And then the next day, I believe it started 90 minutes late. And then the fourth game, there was, I believe, an 11-minute rain delay. So yes, to all manner of delays and weather related nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. To which North Dakota was probably just going,
Yeah, exactly. Although, I mean, they can't even play at home. So, I mean, you know, what are you going to do there? I think
what was the crowd like?
Oh, it was borderline non-existent. It was. I went to the first two games, and they were two of the smallest crowds I've seen. I think this is the fourth or fifth year I've covered the team. Not entirely unexpected between the caliber of team and just the awful weather. It's like, why would you? I mean, it was miserable, truly miserable. And we sit in the press box. I'm fine. But I mean, you know, the window's open and it gets a little chilly in there. I can't imagine being out there wearing a rain suit or whatever, you know, these amazing, impressive diehards are doing out there. I'm hitting the eject button on that one.
It gets cold. It gets cold at these games. I mean, I went to a game. It was the last game I went to sitting in the stands was probably when my daughter was playing club volleyball and there was a tournament down at Oregon State in like early May. They were playing UCLA. So we went to a night game. I mean, it was like we needed blankets and stuff to get through that game. It was cold. And I can't imagine what last week it had to be brutal. So
yeah, it was tough. And I think it'll be tough again this week. I don't think it's supposed to be quite as cold and nearly as rainy, but it'll be in the 40s probably during the game. So it'll be a little chilly. And
what's the caliber of this weekend?
It's a better opponent. They're playing Cal State Northridge. So certainly not a top 25 team, but a legit baseball program. So that'll be a bit more of a measuring stick there. And then they start Pac-12 play the following weekend. So this is kind of the last, you know, the last buildup before that.
And we don't know whether Ade May will pitch this week or not.
They were a little wishy-washy. I expect him to pitch. It seemed to me that Canham and the pitching coach, Rich Dorman, are kind of, you know, being cautious and holding him back a little. I got the sense that he would rather have pitched. So I'd be surprised if he didn't throw this weekend. That said, if it really is cold and, you know, it is miserable again, maybe they would hold him out again. But I kind of expect him to at least throw, you know, start the game and throw, you know, throw. I'm sure he'll be on a pitch limit. But it seems like it was a pretty minor thing. He downplayed it. Coaches downplayed it. So I'm going to take them at their word. Micah said after the game that he kind of tweaked his quad running out of grounder, you know, in the infield, and kind of the coaching staff was like, all right, just sit down and we'll give you the rest of the game. And it turns out the rest of the series off. And, you know, they haven't said what Brady Casper's, I thought he hurt his ankle, but I think it's actually more of like he pulled something in his leg because he kind of caught his cleats on the turf in Arlington, kind of nearly colliding with Bazan on a shallow blooper to right. So I think they're also being pretty cautious with him. I think what Canham told me when I asked for like a third time about him was whenever Brady says he's ready to return, I'll probably make him sit one more game. So I don't know, maybe both those guys will be back next week, because that will be almost full two weeks off, 10 days off for Brady and another week off for Micah.
I know we're not making too much, again, we're not making too much last weekend, but I did see a headline or somewhere in one of your stories about Hainline breaking out. Did he have a decent series? Because he's a guy they eventually need to get going at some point, don't they?
Yeah, he was kind of the one guy on a team that was red hot offensively that had really been scuffling. He had two hits over his first 2 weeks, but he broke out in the opener. He went 3-for-4 with career-high 5 RBIs. And then he went on and had a couple more hits the rest of the series, two more RBIs. And you know, I think he had 4 walks the rest of the series. So I was never really worried about him, and he was definitely not worried. He kind of said, look, man, I've been through this before, saying this wasn't his first rodeo, without saying it wasn't his first rodeo. He's a guy who's hit as a proven hitter in the Pac-12. So, but yeah, his average was down at 0.91, and it's back over 200 now. So yeah. They moved him down to the number into the 9 hole after he kind of scuffled, and I'm sure that didn't hurt things. But, you know, in light of injuries, he was moved back up into the kind of 5-6 spot there in the order for the last couple of games. So I think he's back on the right trajectory there. Mason Guerrero was scuffling a little bit early in the series after his, Pac-12 player of the week win last week. And then he kind of had a big game 4. So, you know, it's like we talked about, I believe it was last week or week before. There's not going to be some extended slumps for this team. There may be a guy here or there that, you know, it's baseball, so guys come and go, but or go up and down. But for the most part, that's a very consistent team, a very experienced team, and a loaded team. Pretty soon here, there's going to be another player announced as a Pac-12 player of the week this week. So that will be 3 straight Pac-12 player of the weeks for someone on the roster. And I guess this will probably come out after 2. Travis Bazana is going to win it again for the second time in 3 weeks. So that's 4 winners if you count the 3 hitters, and then Kamats won 2 weeks ago pitcher of the week.
Yeah.
All right, man. What do you think? You got anything else, or should we call it a wraps there?
No, I can't really. I think you didn't want to talk about men's basketball, so we swept that off to the side.
Hey, I gave you 90 seconds. I bet listeners hit that 30-second button on their app. Boom, 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 3 times to skip past those 90 seconds.
Well, I didn't really say anything, so I can't blame them. But I feel like I should correct one thing. It's not really a correction, but you kept referring to the Pac-12 tournament as next week. It's actually this week.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Beavers start on Thursday, and they play against the Colorado-Oregon winner at noon. We like those noon starts for basketball.
Sleepy.
Especially if you're Joe Freeman in Vegas, where you can cover a game and then you can be at the craps table by 5:00.
Well, I'd prefer to have some pool time during the day if we're being honest with each other, but you know, you're not going to get that now this time of year anyway. So,
I mean, I'm going to try to go to the WCC tournament and try to get something on, you know, Oregon State moving into that league next year, but I don't know how and when that's all going to work out. But that tournament's also played roughly the same time as the Pac-12 tournament. So,
all right, well, there you go. Yes, you're right. Thank you for that, Nick. It is this week. My brain is operating on next week. So this week, the Pac-12 tournament starts. So keep an eye out for your Beavers there. Baseball series against Cal State Northridge starting Thursday, another 4-game series. And then men's basketball wraps up with who do they have this weekend?
They have Utah and Colorado.
There you go.
And then, and that's it. And then be sure to, for football, it'll be me at spring practice on Tuesday, and Joe is there on Thursday and Saturday. Yeah. So
we've got double headers, football, baseball those days.
Also, one other thing I forgot, pro day next week on Monday. That'll be before we do another podcast. So the pro day with there'll be a bunch of Oregon State players at that thing. So
yeah, in fact, that I guess that's good housekeeping right there. We probably won't be able to record this next Monday, so we'll have to read and react on that one. And
I don't know how we're going to do that one yet. Yeah, but if you're into watching big sweaty guys with their shirts off running 40 yard dashes and reaching for the sky on the vertical stuff, a pro day is for you.
All right, somebody cut that audio, and we will we'll get that tagged for Dashiell there, and we will cut this episode before it gets any crazier. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you again next week. Probably not Monday, but one day again soon. So take care. Talk to you next time.